Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia on the 23rd of January 2013. My name is Hereward Fenton. It's great to be with you today. And in today's show, we have a terrific lineup for you. In the second hour, I have Wanda from the New South Wales coal seam gas activist movement, who are doing incredible things to bring awareness to the horrendous environmental degradation brought on by drilling and fracking by the large gas companies in New South Wales. And Wanda actually was, I believe, handcuffed to a tractor or some other implement during one of these protests, and caused, you know, a big kerfuffle. And anyway, she's a great lady and very passionate. And I'm going to be talking to her about some of her recent activities with the movement. And we're just going to go through the whole thing, the whole field, what it's all about, why it's a problem, what the concerns are for the people who are against it, including many farmers, many environmentalists, many people in the Greens. It really, this is one of those subjects that just unifies a lot of different people. It's just, it's a grassroots thing. It cuts across a lot of different political divides. And it's emblematic of the practices of the corporatist New World Order, which just is raping and pillaging across the planet. And it's all just about profits. It's all just about their power. And people's lives are of no consequence. People's quality of life, their health, and even life itself really has very little consequence anymore with the way these large organizations are operating. And, you know, a lot of people just turn off from it. A lot of people cannot face it, cannot deal with it. The cognitive dissonance, the feeling of the overwhelming quality of it is so strong that many people just switch off. But, you know, the reason why the show exists, and the reason why many, you know, people are saying similar things to what I'm saying, is that we know that we do have the ability to turn this around. We know that we do have the power, but many people don't. And so, you know, I really hope from today's show that you'll get some ideas and you'll be able to spread them around, because what I believe is that the powers that be thrive simply from our own self-limiting beliefs. Our belief that we can't do anything, or that it's too hard, we don't even try, and they just sit back and reap the reward of that, and they get bolder, they get braver. The weaker we become, the stronger they become, and the bolder they become in just kind of stripping us of everything. And ultimately, they will strip us of everything, and they'll push us into, you know, a shallow grave and shoot us in the back of the head. That typically is the pattern. That's been the pattern of history, of tyrannical regimes going back hundreds, thousands of years. And if you don't stand up and do something about it now, well, there will come a point where you will be, you know, pushed into a trench and have a bullet in your head. So if you think about it in that way, it's a hell of a lot easier to do something now. I mean, when you're in the position of being lined up naked and being pushed into the trench, it's really hard to do anything about it at that point. You know, you're just gonna grin and say, well, gee, we screwed up here, didn't we? You know, you won't be able to do anything, and you won't be grinning. You'll be grimacing. Anyway, I'm possibly going a little bit over the top here, but the point is that these types of rapacious behavior of corporatist government partnerships, ripping people off, raping the environment, and raping people's quality of life, has to be opposed by people being awake, aware, switched on, and, you know, ready to turn up to a protest. You know, you've got to be ready to turn up to a protest. You've got to be, you know, you've got to make that minimum amount of effort. So that's all coming up in the second hour. Now, in the first hour, I've got a well-esteemed guest of Truth News Radio who's been on the show many times before, Dan Collins, who'll be coming on just after we go to ad break in the end of the first segment. And Dan's actually got a lot of knowledge. Dan Collins, engineer and currently a student of theology, with an interest in etymology and the history of ideas and philosophy. And we're actually going to talk a little bit about the concept of democracy. What is democracy? And you know, I've got some questions about it, and I've had some emails about it that have turned up recently. And you know, a lot of people these days who are part of the broader truth movement or part of, you know, the alternative thinking people, and I honor them and respect them greatly, a lot of them have said, well, you know, we don't like democracy. You know, we think democracy is an outmoded and actually deceptive construct that is actually just there to promote the powers that be and to basically enshrine tyrannical power structures. And of course, the famous dictum is that you know, democracy is like two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for lunch. And that's of course one interpretation of it. I actually want to get into the understanding of the meaning of the terms, and I've done this on previous shows, but I want to go back to that to understand what democracy means, what it originally means etymologically, and I also want to look at the alternative forms of governance that we have, because democracy means literally rule of the people, and however you interpret that, whether you interpret that as majority rule, i.e. 51% control the other 49%, let's just put that a little bit to the back, and we will address it, but let's just first of all understand that the principle is democracy means rule of the people. But then let's look at other principles. Let's look at theocracy. Let's look at aristocracy. Let's look at cryptocracy, one of my favorite terms. And let's look at pharmacracy, which is a term that was brought up by Thomas Szasz, the famous Hungarian psychiatrist, who I mentioned on this show a few weeks ago, who believed that we essentially had a rule by doctors, not so much doctors, but the science and the ideology of medicine had become so powerful that it almost forms a form of dominant ruling structure in the society. So that's all coming up in the rest of the show. Now, I've got a couple of stories here that I would like to highlight. And these are just a few things that have actually popped up on the feeds recently. RFK children speak about JFK assassination. Now, this is a really interesting one. Robert F. Kennedy, who, of course, is the son of Robert Kennedy, who was assassinated in Los Angeles in 1968 in the lead-up to the presidential elections, of which he probably would have won because he was incredibly popular and his brother had been assassinated. And he was skeptical. Bobby Kennedy was skeptical of the Warren Commission. And the story I'm about to read you here is actually from Bobby Kennedy's son, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And this is from USA Today, a big mainstream publication, very, very kind of, you know, right-wing publication, actually. Robert F. Kennedy is convinced that a lone gunman was not solely responsible for the assassination of his uncle, Professor John F. Kennedy, and said his father believed the Warren Commission report was a shoddy piece of craftsmanship. Kennedy and his sister Rory spoke about their family on Friday night while being interviewed in front of an audience by Charlie Rose at the Winspear Opera House in Dallas. Their uncle was killed on November 22, 1963, while riding in a motorcade through Dallas. 5 years later, their father was assassinated in a Los Angeles hotel while celebrating his win in the California Democratic presidential primary. Robert F. Kennedy said his father spent a year trying to come to grips with his father's death, reading the work of Greek philosophers, Catholic scholars, and David Thoreau, trying to figure out the kinds of existential implications of why a just God would allow injustice to happen on the magnitude he was seeing. But the key point in all this is that he has said now publicly that his father did not believe the Warren Commission, and the evidence is very convincing, and he says this, the evidence is very convincing that it was not a lone gunman. Look, after all these years, after all these decades, to see one of the Kennedy family coming forward and saying this so publicly, I just feel it's really important. I mean, it's a turning point in a way because, I mean, the Kennedy assassination has been an incredible divider of people, and it's also the classic prototype of the conspiracy theory, because the idea of conspiracies really has a lot to do with this. When the Warren Commission came along and said there was only a lone gunman, and the evidence that was so obvious to many people and was so public that there was more than one shooter involved was treated as a conspiracy theory. And for years and years and years, those who went down that path were sort of ridiculed and relegated to fringe status. And these days it's actually become a form of social persecution. And we've seen it so strongly with the recent Sandy Hook events and the aftermath of that, where a lot of people are asking questions about it that many of them are valid, and I don't agree with all of them. I don't agree with the people who are saying that the parents of the victims are actors. I don't subscribe to that. But there's a lot of things about that event that haven't been properly covered. The media just gives you sound bites, and they just gloss over things really quickly and don't give you a chance to look into to even understand what the facts are. There was no video footage. There was no explanation. There were some anomalies or contradictions about the types of guns that were found. And, of course, you know, this huge campaign about limiting access to weapons. But anyway, anyone who goes down that path publicly has been vilified horrendously in the media, and then they conflate every conspiracy theory with every other one. So, and of course they always highlight the most absurd ones. So the people who are saying that the parents of the murdered children are actors are given a lot of attention in the media, and then that's conflated with people who say 9/11 was an inside job, and they say it's all the same. See, they're all wacko. And of course, this is just being done from within the mainstream media by paid hacks whose job it is to engage in propaganda and reverse propaganda, you know, negative propaganda, black propaganda, to vilify dissent within the society. So something to look out for. Now, just very, very quickly before we go to break, Huffington Post has a really important story about vaccines. Vaccine court awards millions to two children with autism. The Federal Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, better known as Vaccine Court, has just awarded millions of dollars to two children with autism for pain and suffering and lifelong care of their injuries. So that's a really important story, and I'm going to do a whole show on this soon, but just bring it to your attention. It'll be on the show notes. But it shows that things are changing there. It's a major turning point. We're getting, finally, an admission of something that has been denied for so long. We're going to break. We'll be right back after the break with Dan Collins, and we'll be talking about democracy. Stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths, and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix to the pink dark condition.
Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. And do check us out on the internet. Have a look at truthnews.com.au. Subscribe to our podcast and send me a message. Anything you've got that you'd like to talk about, I will bring up. And that is actually what I'm going to do in the rest of today's show. I've had an email actually from a listener, a very thoughtful one. And the person concerned will know who it is. I don't want to use his name because we haven't talked about this publicly before, and I just don't like exposing people's names unless they've agreed to do that. But the person concerned, if he's listening, will know who it is. Now, the question here is about democracy, and I know many truthers have absorbed some of the views that are very prominent, that democracy is kind of a sham, somewhat of a scam, because it ends up being majority rule, and it ends up being like 51% control the other 49, and the 49% become disenfranchised. And, I mean, that's horrendous, and I would totally, you know, distance myself from anything like that. That's not the way we want to run society. But that is not the meaning of democracy. That is not what democracy means. And meanings of words are important. Distortions of meanings are also important, but original meanings are important too. And we need to understand what we want in life. See, we need to know what we want. And that's why meaning is important, because if you understand the meaning, then you can say this is what we're working towards. So let's understand what we mean when we talk about democracy. Now, one of my listeners has contrasted democracy with republic. Now, I think there's a bit of a logical error, a bit of a category error there, because they're describing two different categories of things. But to get into all of that in more detail, I would like now to welcome back to Truth News Dan Collins, a great raconteur and expert in many academic matters. Dan, welcome back to Truth News.
Yeah, you're very kind, Herod. Thanks so much. Good to be here. Can I just make a quick comment on that old two wolves and a sheep deciding on what's for dinner. I think it was originally Benjamin Franklin who coined that little quip, but I think he sacrificed clarity for brevity, because typically wolves don't consult with a sheep before they eat it. I mean, I think what he was implying two wolves in sheep's clothing are deciding on what's for dinner, which seems what they're trying to imply, but it implies a very cynical view of democracy. That is to say, democracy is just a mob of ne'er-do-wells and bums just trying to take advantage of and deprive hardworking people of their hard-gotten, hard-earned livelihoods. You hear that all the time on redneck radio. You know, the single mothers, the doll bludgers, all the people sponging off the hard-working minority.
I think you made the suggestion that it really should be two wolves in sheep's clothing and a sheep, because when we have the manipulation of democracy, what we typically have is wolves in sheep's clothing. Is that correct?
Well, I've said that's what's implied by this quote, I think originally from Benjamin Franklin, but this is a very, very, very old argument. I mean, you know, it goes all the way back to at least, you know, ancient Greece, and Rome, you know, democracies versus tyrannies. But having grown up during the Cold War, having heard so much, right-wing conservative propaganda against democracy and socialism and this sort of social thinking, and accusing them of being, you know, in league with the communists, trying to deprive, you know, hardworking rich people of their, you know, of their hard-earned, you know, rightfully earned and rightfully owned goods and stocks and bonds, and one hears this all the time. We heard it ad nauseum during the Cold War, but I would say there's this ongoing struggle. I mean, we have an ongoing struggle in society, as always, of monopolists, wealthy monopolists, oligarchs, who want to control the democratic process, and they want to instill some kind of suspicion in democracy. They want to engender suspicion towards democracy in the minds of certain of their, people they would like to certainly, they're trying to enlist other property owners and other wealthy people into their cause.
Dan, can I just interject for a moment? Because I'd like to just clarify a couple of things. You studied Greek. You understand the philosophical underpinnings of these words, right? Now, I just want to clarify, what does democracy mean? Can you just give us a definition?
Well, I think you'd say demokrasis, at least in modern Greek. Well, it just means simply stated the rule of the people, ho demos, which is the people. A republic is a Latin word from rerum or res and publica, public things, I believe. So people say that they're effectively tautologists to say democracy or republic. But again, you see, people make the argument that a republic is a system of rules or a constitution or some kind of constitution of government. Some sort of statutes which enshrine, the rights of a citizen. And these inviolate rights, in contrast with the random will of a mob.
I'm just going to interject again. Sorry to cut you off, but I just want to actually read from Wikipedia, and I want to get your comment on it, Dan. Now, this is straight from Wikipedia. Democracy is a form of government in which all eligible citizens have an equal say in the decisions that affect their lives. Democracy allows eligible citizens to participate equally, either directly or through elected representatives, in the proposal, development, and creation of laws. It encompasses social, economic, and cultural conditions that enable the free and equal practice of political self-determination. Now, I know there's a lot of loaded phrases there, and particularly the word eligible. I know a lot of people are going to seize on that and say, well, yes, you say, well, people who are eligible can participate, but then someone can decide who is eligible and who is not. And of course, that is definitely going to be a problem. But anyway, your comments, Dan.
Yeah, well, we've had this argument for, at least 100 years. We've had women's suffrage and we've had, all kinds of arguments about, who can and can't vote. One of the biggest problems with the debate is one suspects that there's some kind of trickery or some kind of hidden agenda going on. If you're trying to exclude or include certain people, that there's a class, it's been manipulated by some kind of, invisible class, which is trying to, advance their own interests. As I said, we've been hearing about this sort of thing for, since the beginning, since the Russian Revolution.
We're just going to break. We'll be continuing straight after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we're talking about democracy. We'll be right back.
Children, yeah, don't
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We're going to continue with the discussion about democracy, and I want to get into some of the really key questions here. And I want to actually play to you a clip that's from a YouTube video that was recommended to me about the distinction between various forms of governance, in particular oligarchy versus monarchy versus democracy versus anarchy versus the republic. So there are several. Let me just go through them again. Oligarchy, monarchy, republic, democracy, and anarchy. Now, these are contrasted in this video. I think it's a very interesting video, and it raises a lot of very important points, but there are some things about it that I actually don't agree with, and I think there are some mistaken assumptions in it that I would like to highlight in our discussion. So I'll just kick that video off, and then we'll come back to discuss it straight after.
When Benjamin Franklin exited the Constitutional Convention, he was asked by a woman, "Sir, what have you given us?" His immediate response was, "A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." Yet most Americans today have been persuaded that our nation's governmental system is a democracy and not a republic. The difference between these two is essential in understanding Americanism and the American system. Before we discuss political systems, however, it's helpful to address the confusion that has been spread about the political spectrum. Many have been led to believe that the political spectrum places groups such as communists on the far left, fascists or dictators on the far right, and political moderates or centrists in the middle. However, a more accurate political spectrum will show government having zero power on the far right to having 100% power on the far left. At the extreme right, there is no government. The extreme left features total government under such labels as communism, socialism, Nazism, fascism, princes, potentates, dictators, kings, any form of total government. Those who claim that Nazis and fascists are right-wing never define their terms. This amounts to spreading confusion. Toward the middle of the political spectrum can be found the type of government limited to its proper role of protecting the rights of the people. That's where the Constitution of the United States is. Those who advocate such a form of government are really constitutional moderates. So let's analyze the basic forms of government. They are monarchy or dictatorship ruled by one, oligarchy ruled by a few, democracy ruled by a majority, republic ruled by law, and anarchy, which is ruled by no one. In discussing these five, we'll see that they can be narrowed down to even fewer. Looking first at monarchy or dictatorship, this form of government doesn't really exist in the practical sense. It's always a group that puts one of its members up front. A king has his council of nobles or earls, and every dictator has his bureaucrats or commissars, the men behind the scenes. This isn't ruled by one, even though one person may be the visible leader. It's ruled by a group. So let's eliminate monarchy, dictatorship, because it never truly exists. Oligarchy, which is ruled by a group, is the most common form of government in all history. And it is the most common form of government today. Most of the nations of the world are ruled by a powerful few, and therefore oligarchy remains. At the other end, we find anarchy, which means without government. Some people have looked over history and found that many of its worst crimes were committed by governments. So they decided that having no government might be a good idea. But this is a mistake, because as the ancient Greeks stated, without law there can be no freedom. Our founding fathers agreed and held that some amount of government is a necessary force in any civilized, orderly society. In a state of anarchy, however, everyone has to guard life, liberty, and property, and the lives of family members. Everyone must be armed, and movement is severely restricted because one's property has to be protected at all times. Civilized people have always hired someone to do the guarding, a sheriff, a police force, or some branch of government. Once law enforcement was in place, the people were freer. They could leave their property, work in the fields, and so on. In short, the proper amount of government makes everyone freer. There are some who advocate anarchy, however, not because they want no government, but because they don't like what they have. They use anarchy as a tool for revolutionary change. The condition of anarchy is very much like a vacuum where something rushes in to fill it. These calculating anarchists work to break down the existing government with rioting, killing, looting, and terrorism. Tragically, the people living in such chaos often go to those best able to put an end to it and beg them to take over and restore order. And who is best able to put an end to the chaos? The very people who started it. The anarchists who created the problem then create a government run by them, an oligarchy, where they have total power. This is exactly what happened in Russia that led to Lenin taking total power, and in Germany where Hitler's brown shirts created the chaos that brought him to power. But anarchy isn't a stable form of government. It's a quick transition from something that exists to something desired by the power hungry. It's a temporary condition. And because it isn't permanent, we eliminate it as well. The word democracy comes from two Greek words, demos, meaning people, and kratian, meaning to rule. Democracy, therefore, means the rule of the people, majority rule. This, of course, sounds good, but suppose the majority decides to take away one's home, or business, or children. Obviously, there has to be a limit. The flaw in democracy is that the majority isn't restrained. If more than half the people can be persuaded to want something in a democracy, they rule. What about republic? Well, that comes from the Latin, res meaning thing, and publica meaning public. It means the public thing, the law. A true republic is one where the government is limited by law, leaving the people alone. America's founders had a clean slate to write on. They could have set up an oligarchy. In fact, there were some who wanted George Washington to be their king. But the founding fathers knew history, and they chose to give us the rule of law in a republic, not the rule of a majority in a democracy. Why? Let's demonstrate the difference in the setting of the Old West. Consider a lynch mob in a democracy. 35 horseback riders chase one lone gunman. They catch him. And they vote 35-1 to hang him. Democracy has triumphed, and there's one less gunman to contend with. Now consider the same scenario in a republic. The 35 horseback riders catch the gunman and vote 35-1 to hang him. But the sheriff arrives, and he says, "You can't kill him. He's got his right to a fair trial." So they take the gunman back to town. A jury of his peers is selected, and they hear the evidence and the defense, and they decide if he shall hang. Does the jury even decide by majority rule? No, it has to be unanimous or he goes free. The rights of the government aren't subject to majority rule but to the law. This is the essence of a republic.
Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen, the essence of a republic. Brilliantly contrasted with a number of other forms of governance, and seems all very clear, doesn't it? Or is it? I'll hand you over to Dan for a quick commentary. Dan, is it as clear and simple as what we've seen here in the video?
Thanks, Sarah. Well, a quick caveat. I believe in democracy. I don't think the average person's a fool, and the average and ordinary people can get together and decide what's good for them, you know, in Congress, and they don't, you know. And they can decide what rules they're going to obey and what rules are good for them. There's that little bit of video repeats some old canards that have been, I don't know, kicking around for years. I mean, one hears all the time about, you know, the Nere dynasty, starting with Julius Caesar, you know, being the first system, the first tyranny that took over democratic Rome. But that is nothing like the truth. I mean, Rome always had a Senate, and Rome always had a Senate after the Nereids took over. The fact was, Rome before Julius Caesar was ruled by a series of dictators. I mean, Pompey was a dictator.
And I do encourage listeners to listen to the whole video. I actually have only provided an excerpt from it there, and it does actually get into Rome and Greece and a number of other examples there of republics. But Dan, just a quick question about the concept here of majority rule, because I do believe that this is really important and central to it. Is democracy necessarily equivalent to majority rule? As in my understanding, no.
Well, it turns out that in the United States, for example, if you take the example of the United States Constitution, some things are decided by a majority. That is 51% of the, you know, of the House of Representatives, and certain things are actually decided by a two-thirds majority. It all depends on the actual system you're talking about. Majority rule can mean two-thirds in situations. It can mean, you know, 50%.
Or it could be unanimous. I mean, you could implement it in a sense that it must be unanimous. And in the Occupy movement, this is an example of that, they required all their decisions to be unanimous. Now, that's just a form of... It's a form of the people ruling or making decisions for themselves. The question of whether you have a majority or unanimous or what percentage there is a form for implementation. We're going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. With Truth News Radio, and we're just talking about democracy. We've been looking at this video called Republic versus Democracy, trying to critique it a little bit. We don't really have much time to do it. We've only got a few minutes left. We've got the last segment here of the show before we go to hour two with our really important interview coming up with Wanda from the CSG movement in New South Wales, and I really do encourage you to stay tuned for that, because this is really, really real grassroots activism. Nothing airy-fairy here, nothing that's just sort of subject to all of these confusing minutiae of people's interpretation, which indeed is what we are engaging with here. Although I also believe that is important too, because everything that we do in society requires understanding and mutual understanding of what we're talking about. And I do feel that we've got a problem here when we don't define our terms. If we do not define clearly democracy, we end up with, like the man in this video saying, oh, democracy just means majority rule. Well, no, that's his interpretation of the meaning of democracy. And of course, that is the way it's implemented, of course, but that is not what it means. It means rule of the people, and a republic can be a democracy. A democracy can be a republic. Democracies have to create a system of laws. The video here that we've been listening to has been proposing that, well, in a republic you have a system of laws, and everyone follows the laws. So it doesn't matter if the majority want to have someone lynched, because the laws will tell you what to do. But remember, the laws have to be written. Who decides what the laws will be? Again, we're back to the question of a democracy, because it has to be the people deciding the laws, and it's very hard to get everyone to agree 100% on anything. And of course, depending on what culture you're in, the laws will be completely different. In Islamic countries, sodomy is often punished by death under Sharia law. I mean, in Sharia law in Islamic countries, certain crimes are punishable by death or by having limbs chopped off. In Australia, you know, sodomy is not considered anything. It's not a crime of any kind. I only bring it up as an example. I don't really want to highlight that, but it's just an example of how laws depend on culture, and they depend on the decisions of people who get together and make those decisions based on their religious and cultural beliefs. Over to you, Dan.
Well, you made an important point. I'm sorry, I'm a little suspicious. I mean, having grown up in the Cold War, you hear this. It's true that, you know, the founding fathers of the United States were actually wealthy oligarchs, you must say. They were wealthy landowners. They did actually own slaves, for one reason or another. And they talked about And Mike Moore actually wrote a book on, trying to remember the title, on how the wealthy founding fathers actually rigged the system to make an oligarchy have a hand over the have advantages over the ordinary people in a democratic system. You know, the electoral college is an example. The electoral college elects the president, not the people directly. It's just one of these many instances which Mike Moore talks about, how democracy has been frustrated, by an oligarchy. Obviously there's this interplay, and a democracy needs to have rules. I don't agree with this characterization of democracies being fragile and short-lived and dangerous, because this appeal to this fantasy Roman democracy that existed before Julius Caesar. I mean, there was Pompey, who was a dictator, and before him was Sulla, and before him was Marius, and this whole chain of strongmen, who were virtual dictators who killed who they like. I mean, and there was this patina of participatory government.
Can you just address the example given in the video there about the lynch mob and the difference between a democracy and a republic in the way it was presented there, where we see a lynch mob who wants to basically enact revenge on someone, and a majority of people want it, but in a republic, as it says, this won't happen because there are a system of laws, and the man will be tried, following those laws, and a jury, which must have a unanimous vote, will then either convict the man or exonerate him. What do you think about that as an example? Just what are your thoughts on that?
Well, is it a representative example? There's a real suspicion that democracy is up to no good. But I mean, one can be equally suspicious of some kind of oligarchy's, ardent belief in some kind of republic. Remember the old communist dictatorships, in Eastern Europe and that sort of thing, purportedly believed in the most beautiful ideals. They had the most beautiful ideals. They had the most, the most wonderful, courts and all sorts of fantastic, things they purportedly believed in, but it was, it turns out it was a sham, a ghoulish sham. There was, despite all their, wonderful supposed ideals enshrined in law, it was just a ruthless oligarchy which poisoned their own country. I mean,
so just to get back to our example again, with the man who's been accused of some crime, well, A, the crime, it might be something that's, adultery, okay? Well, that's not a crime in our country, but in other countries it is a crime. So first of all, the decision of whether it's a crime is something that was written into law based on some people's viewpoints. Now, the video that we just watched doesn't give you any indication of how certain laws would come into existence. What's the mechanism by which those laws come into existence? That again brings us back to the problem of you're either going to have an oligarchy who makes all the decisions and just says this is what's good for you, or you've got to have some form of democracy. I just can't see any alternative. Now, democracy, whether it's majority rule or unanimous vote, simply means we're letting people decide what they want. And that includes the writing of the laws that get written that have to be followed. Of course, I agree that we should have laws that are followed, but they've got to be just laws. And if a group or an oligarchy or a group of people said, well, we want to outlaw, if you put your garbage in the wrong bin, you go to prison for 5 years, under some environmental form of tyranny, let's say, just as a wild example, I'd be pretty outraged by that. But you know what? A lot of people would think that's good. And this is, again, the problem with all the forms of governance that we've ever had are flawed.
Yeah, you're right. And so, you know, ultimately, end of the day, all you can do is depend on democracy. Because, I mean, well, the example of the lynch mob is actually a flawed example, because it never goes into in any detail is who exactly is the sheriff. Is the sheriff, this reminds me of the Assange trial, is he a judicial officer, or is he an executive officer, or is he a legislative officer? Okay, he sounds like some kind of executive officer pursuing, you know, rules established by the Garusio, you know, whether that's democratically elected or not. But he's following these supposedly just principles, guiding principles, to give a guy, you know, a fair trial. But this has never been made clear. You know, the sheriff, okay, the sheriff in a county in the United States, you know, with laws under the United States Constitution. But that, unfortunately, that's kind of hopeless, because we're not talking about the entire world. I mean, you know, the Wild West is in political economic, economists are always talking about the Wild West as whether a kind of either whether a good or a bad example of this sort of, you know, small government concept. And there was some political economists sneer it as the Wild West, and some think, you know, this is a great thing, you know, laissez-faire economics and, you know, and you know, no rules. But yeah,
I think in some ways it's seen as sort of like it's a golden era, or the people have an idea that there was this golden era in the early stages of the American Republic, and they also see this golden era in the early stages of the Roman Republic. There may be some truth to that, but in the early stages of many civilizations, there was a golden era, and of course, it's later on. You look what happened to Rome later; it became pretty horrendous. But of course, you know, the Republic became superseded by a tyrannical form of dictatorship. I think we have to really try and understand what we're on about. Try and understand what it is we want for the future. We do not want an oligarchy making decisions for us. We do not want a rule by the few who decide for us what is right. Now, I think any republic can easily become like that, especially if you don't address the questions, as in this video, of how these laws got written. It would just and he critiques other revolutions. He critiques anarchy, and he critiques, you know, the French Revolution and the Soviets because they ended up becoming like this. But this purported republic could easily go the same way. Dan, a quick 30-second roundup. We're just at the end of the hour.
Yeah. As I say, I grew up in the Cold War, and I'm quite used to this long-going discussion. At the moment, it's important to think about the British government addressing the issue of the royal assent to parliamentary laws, which is quite relevant at the moment.
Okay, we're just at the end of the hour. Sorry to have to cut you off there, Dan. I would love to get into this in far more depth at a future point. We'll be right back at the beginning of the next hour with our interview with Wanda from the anti-CSG movement in New South Wales. Don't go away.